Good morning. It is 7:41. It is Tuesday, September 27, 2016. Here is your KDNK local newscast for this Tuesday morning. I'm Steve Cole, live in our Carbondale studios with News Director Gavin Dahl. Good morning again, Gavin.
Good morning, Steve. The Town of Basalt meets tonight at 6, and they're expected to approve the appointment of interim town manager Ron Miller. There are some high-profile resolutions on the agenda as well. Basalt may approve a pre-application agreement with Habitat for Humanity regarding Habitat's RE1 school district housing proposal on Basalt High School property. Also up for discussion will be approving a process for developing an arts campus on the town-owned Willits Performing Arts parcel of property. Town of Carbondale trustees meet tonight at 6. Local businesswoman Heather Henry will be sworn in as a trustee at the start of the meeting. Heather is a local landscape architect. She's being appointed to replace recently departed trustee A.J. Hobbs. Henry has served on Planning and Zoning Commission as well as Parks and Rec. Her first major order of business as a trustee will be to participate in the budgeting process. Carbondale's facing shortfalls in the next budget cycle. Garfield County slashed the tax rate for the Road and Bridge Fund, so the annual payment to the town from the county, expected to be around $175,000, is now projected to be more like $95,000 for 2017. Funds from the oil and gas industry will also be down from last budget, while health insurance costs will be up. The Colorado Division of Insurance is hosting a public forum today in the wake of health insurance premiums skyrocketing for people who buy insurance on the state's individual market, Benta Berkland reports.
Health insurance premiums are expected to go up by an average of 20% statewide next year, and that could be as high as 40% in some regions of the state. According to a report from the nonpartisan Colorado Health Institute, that means many people will simply become uninsured and pay the tax penalty rather than the thousands of dollars each year in premiums. Democratic Summit County Commissioner Dan Gibbs is among those organizing people to come to Denver to talk to the Division of Insurance about the high costs and the personal stories of people's health insurance costs causing them to reach their financial breaking points. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
In the Roaring Fork Valley, individuals buying health insurance on the exchange are facing average premium increases of 35% next year. Anthem will be the only carrier left, and they're discontinuing PPO plans. So the only available plans will be HMOs, which limit choice of physicians and specialists. In this year's election, Republican incumbent Scott Tipton of Cortez faces former State Senator Gail Schwartz, a Democrat from Crested Butte, for the chance to represent the 3rd Congressional District in Washington. Earlier this month, Club 20 hosted a debate between the two candidates. In this clip, they talk Social Security and student loans.
9 in 10 Coloradans age 65 plus receive Social Security benefits that average $1,230 a month. The collective positive impact of these benefit checks moving through the Colorado economy is $20 billion per year. In June, the annual Trustees Fund report on Social Security once again forecasts that the trust fund will be depleted by the year 2034, at which time benefits will have to be reduced by 25%. My question is, what do you think is the greatest challenge for Social Security's long-term future?
Thank you. Well, certainly we must really recognize that the solvency of the Social Security Trust Fund is one of the most important things we can do for our seniors today as well as to the people that will be aging in the future. We know with the downturn that there are specific challenges for certainly our seniors now and their ability to really be able to pay the cost of living that's before them. We have to make sure as we move forward that we are balancing the budget at the federal level. We are finding ways that we can keep that solvency and that we also find mechanisms to continue to fund the trust fund. We can't put the burden on our young people to support a system that is broken. I believe I could go back, work with the interests, and make sure that we have a system that will protect our seniors today and the Social Security system of tomorrow.
Scott?
Bob, appreciate the question. I believe you and I have visited on this. We need to make sure that we are fulfilling the promise to our senior citizens. Those people right now who are on a fixed income have no opportunity to be able to go back into the workforce. That needs to be an obligation. Part of it is to be able to actually generate revenues as well. I think we need to be mindful. We have the lowest labor participation rate in four decades in this country because of bad economic policy coming out of this administration. If we can put more people back to work, we're actually going to have more people paying into the system. But we're going to have to be innovative as well, to be able to look at our children, our grandchildren, to make sure that they have a sustainable program as well. We're coming forward with ideas out of the House of Representatives in terms of being able to actually address this. But the first commitment that I've always made, always will stand behind, if you are a senior citizen right now and you're getting your Social Security, you are going to get your full measure. We're going to be getting people back to work in this country once again to pay back into that system and working on innovative ideas so that our children and grandchildren can inherit that same promise.
Gail?
Representative Dipton is right. We need to put people back to work. I think we have seen remarkable job growth since the end of the Bush administration, where our economy was suffering greatly. But we haven't seen enough job growth. And we have to make sure we have a government that's willing to invest in people and the industries in this nation, not just invest in the 1%. We need to create jobs, we need to train people, we need to train workers, and put money back into education.
Social Security again. It's the only source of income for nearly 3 in 10 Coloradans, and it lifts 168,000 Coloradans out of poverty. Yet, as I said earlier, it is a system that's under some duress. Will you commit to updating Social Security for future generations?
Absolutely. I will stand to protect Social Security and Medicare. I'm not about privatizing Medicare like some people are. And we need to make sure that those are two anchors of our culture and our society and our communities. Protecting our Social Security system, obviously, the solvency of the trust fund is critical to the future benefits that will be available, and that requires working together, making sure that the resources are available, and we have a sound budget process that will continue to protect Social Security moving forward.
Yes, we've already discussed, we need to make that commitment. I've stood behind that. But we need to be innovative. Talk to the young people that are here this evening. None of them believe that Social Security is going to be there for them. Very few of them, they haven't even thought about having Medicare yet. So they don't believe it's going to be there. We're going to have to not only ensure that those that are currently receiving and those who are about to receive it have that commitment fulfilled. That's a commitment that I have made. But we need to be building with innovative ideas, seeing if we can make sure that we're going to be delivering on that promise to our children and to our grandchildren as well, that the system is going to be there. And part of this, frankly, it does expand out beyond just the area of Social Security. It's just fiscal responsibility out of Washington, D.C. We've got a $19 trillion debt that we are facing right now that is a burden, and it's charging up the credit card on the backs of our kids and our grandkids. That we need to make sure that we're prioritizing where those dollars go. That's a commitment that our nation, our people have made, something that we do need to fulfill, and we're going to be looking at those ideas for our kids and grandkids to make sure it is there for them when they retire as well.
When it comes to having a sound budget process, let's stop balancing the budget on the backs of our children, our seniors, and our the folks that need it the most in our society. Let's balance it on the backs of our corporate citizens, especially those that are shipping jobs out of this country. Let's make sure that we have a budget, and also we take care of these young people that are going to be paying into the system. Let's take that situation of that student debt off their back. We need to help them restructure it. We need to help them work through it. And also, we're a nation that's loaning our banks money at 0%, but loaning it to our students at 8%. This is crippling our young people and
Thank
their ability
you very
to
much.
Move forward.
Katie and Kay will bring you more from the 3rd Congressional District debate as we approach Election Day. For Katie and Kay News, I'm Gavin Dahl.
The world may have hit a climate change ceiling in fossil fuel production, and smart money could be headed towards renewables. Eric Galatis reports.
Existing fossil fuel production is enough to blow the world's entire remaining carbon budget for keeping global temperatures below limits set at last year's Paris Climate Summit, according to a new report from Oil Change International. David Turnbull with the group says if the world is serious about avoiding what scientists have called catastrophic climate change, governments need to stop any new development.
The most rational course of action is to start now, to move away from fossil fuels, and to ensure that we're doing it in a way that really helps our economy and doesn't hurt it.
The report's carbon count did not include future proven reserves, a big part of energy companies' valuation on Wall Street, only existing wells, mines, and refineries. The study notes that the industry is set to invest some $14 trillion in new extraction and infrastructure over the next 20 years in the U.S., Canada, Australia, India, Russia, Qatar, and Iran. Turnbull says the good news is there's time to transition to clean energy before emissions pass 800 gigatons, the mark set by scientists to keep average global temperatures from rising above 2 degrees Celsius. He says if the decline in production is properly managed, we can meet energy needs and climate goals.
Billions upon billions of dollars are spent by governments by way of fossil fuel subsidies. Those need to be eliminated and put towards programs that can help develop transition programs for fossil fuel workers to bring them into the clean energy economy.
He says if new development is allowed to go forward, assets could end up stranded when the reality of climate change finally sinks in for policymakers, which would hurt investors and communities dependent on fossil fuels.
But there's also a financial aspect of this where it's clear that smart investors are going to move their money away from risky fossil fuel companies as we move forward.
A federal appeals court is scheduled to hear opening arguments tomorrow in a case challenging the EPA's Clean Power Plan, rules designed to help the U.S. meet climate goals set in Paris. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.